You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
You're tuned into R1 News at 1. Every weekday from 1 till 2 p.m, our dedicated news team brings you the hard-hitting stories, interviews and culture pieces from across Aotearoa Dunedin.
Hi guys, my name is Isla. I'm with you for the R1 News today. It is Tuesday, the 1st of October, and I'm in the booth with Jemima Lorimer. At 1:15 today, we're going to be having an interview with Michael Swanson, a PhD candidate from the Otago's Politics Department, on this weekend's hospital protests and National's commitment to Dunedin to deliver a hospital as they had originally campaigned for. Following that up a bit later down the line will be Sam's Sports Sweep, followed by my STEM news segment, which will be covering brain receptors, stuff to do with cats, amino acids, all that fun stuff. But before we get into all of that, we're going to be doing the bulletin, which will follow after the next song, Uranus, which is by Terror of the Deep.
Here are the R1 News at 1 headlines.
This is the R1 News Bulletin for Tuesday, 1st October. I'm Jemima.
And I'm Isla. In local news, in light of recent budget cuts to the new Dunedin Hospital, an estimated crowd of 35,000 people marched to the Octagon on Saturday in protest. The event housed a number of speakers who each gave statements and speeches on the cuts. Councillor Bill Alkilin opened the event, leading to protests in singing the Build Our Hospital song. Jules Raddick, the mayor of Dunedin, was the first to speak, followed by Sheila Barnett, the chair of Clinical Transformation Group. Following her was Linda Smiley, a registered nurse working in Dunedin Hospital. She and members of the New Zealand Nurses Association organization had protested against cuts in late 2022, many of which were reversed due to the successful petition. In light of recent cuts, the petition has since been activated again. Sign at change.org/reverse the announced cuts to the new Dunedin Hospital if you are interested in signing the petition. Anne Daniels, president of the New Zealand Nurses Organization, followed, calling on a statement from Dr. Shane Reddy that says, quote, National will deliver all the beds, operating theaters, and radiology services that Labour removed, end quote, and that the cost of the commitment would, quote, be fully funded as part of the next national government's program, end quote. Daniels criticized the unfulfilled promises of the government. Her sentiment was echoed with posters and signs during the protest that said, frickin' liars, and we need leaders, not liars. One call-in-response chant during the protest was even, Luxon lies, patient dies. Daniels finished her speech, pointing out that He tangata, he tangata, he tangata, the people, the people, the people, was missing from the current government plans. The next speaker following her was Brian Cadigan, mayor of the Clutha district. He opened his speech with a quote, why are we here? Because we've been bloody lied to. His speech focused on the actions of the government and the mistreatment and neglect towards healthcare workers if the government proceeds with the plans. The next speaker was Piri Tohu Hapiti from the Māori Medical Student Association, a fourth-year medical student at the University of Otago. He began his speech on the poem that questioned the current failure of the hospital. One stanza reads as follows. From a system broken from head to toe, this hospital stands token of its former glow. With aims to cleave in equity, but always predictably, we are forced holistically to stray away from things to tiriti. Tohu Hapiti followed with a passionate call to action by questioning the ramifications on communities most affected by these budget cuts. Quote, how can we tend to the health requirements of a combined people who present complicated pictures of health, and yet to have some expectations to muster a next generation of complicated pictures of health, and yet have some expectation to muster a next generation of competent health practitioners whose medical course degrees and environment in which learning is done has suffered an anemic response to reinvestment. Former head of Dunedin Hospital ED department, Dr. John Chambers, followed with a similar sentiments. Dr. Thompson, former health board chairman, city councillor, and neurosurgery campaigner, followed. His main focus followed on the history of the hospital with current recommendations outside of the government. Thompson was originally part of the Southern Partnership Group responsible for building the hospital from its inception. In 2007, Thompson was chair of the Otago DHB, where the board signed off on a rebuild process. In regards to that, he said, it has been 17 years and it will be at least 25 by the time anything opens, if anything opens. He also brings up the new Dunedin Hospital Review, known as the Rust Report or the Rust Review. The report states that, quote, the scope of the new Dunedin Hospital should be fixed as a matter of urgency, and no further changes should be considered unless they are matters which would render the facilities no longer fit for purpose, end quote. The review was released to public in September, but was conducted in May by Robert Russ. Former Minister of Health Pete Hodgson was next to speak. He focused on the details of the current Rust report and the response of the current government. The main controversy around the current hospital is how the current budget of $1.88 billion is insufficient and that the cost would need to be raised to $3 billion. However, this $3 billion estimate is not outlined in the Rust report and is claimed to be untrue by Hodgson. The additional money required to build the hospital is outlined in the Rust report and pointed out by Hodgson would be the addition of car parks, community pathology projects, and refurbishing costs, with other surplus expenses that are non-related or trivial to the main construction of the hospital. In his speech, Hodgson says, quote, I'm calling them out now, loud and clear, for their deceit.
In national news, resources for National's new maths curriculum in schools will be paid for by axing a program that helps teachers learn Te Reo Māori, RNZ reports. Education Minister Erica Stanford says the $30 million needed for the curriculum to cover maths workbooks, guidance and lesson plans will be diverted from Te Ahu o Te Reo Māori. The new curriculum will begin in the 2025 school year. President of New Zealand Education Institution Mark Potter estimates 2,000 teachers across Aotearoa will be affected, losing time and funding to pursue the course within their working hours, meaning that they must pursue such courses in their weeknights or weekends. Potter says teachers are already time poor. The teacher union fought years for the program that teaches teachers competency in Te Reo and also tikanga and an understanding of Te Ao Māori. Potter says the union would say no to more would not say no to more resources for maths, but it did not see the value in taking away money from Te Reo Māori education. The union also has concerns about the new curriculum being brought in under National, as it is not evidence-based to lift students' achievements in schools, whereas Te Ahu o Te Reo Māori was. Minister Stanford says maths achievement needs to be prioritised and that only, quote, 45% of high school students are passing foundational maths. Testing students under the new maths curriculum found only 22% of Year 8 students were at the expected standard for maths, a figure Stanford used speaking to RNZ as to why maths must be prioritised. However, under the current maths curriculum, the achievement rate for Year 8 students in maths is 42%.
Countries are warning nurses not to move to New Zealand. Last Friday, the Philippine Embassy in Wellington issued great caution to nurses coming in due to the lack of employment opportunities. The Indian High Commission earlier this month issued a similar statement to their nurses and employed people not to come to New Zealand without guaranteed replacement jobs. Philippine Ambassador Kira Azucena met with a number of Filipino nurses who reported difficulty in finding work. In a statement from the Embassy of the Republic of Philippines, they said that, quote, there is currently a lack of employment opportunities for foreign nurses or internationally qualified nurses in New Zealand. Furthermore, they know to be wary of individuals and agencies that give out false advice and information for those considering entering the country. Notably, there have been cases of people advertising foreign nurses to take the comprehensive assessment program or the objective structured clinical examination for nurses, then apply for registration at the Nursing Council of New Zealand. While all options are legitimate, none, as stated by the embassy, offer a guaranteed spot of employment.
Lastly, a reminder that voting for the 2025 OUSA exec is open. Head to voting.ousa.org.nz to cast your vote. You have until 4 p.m. this Thursday.
This has been the R1 News Bulletin for Tuesday, the 1st of October. Today's bulletin was written and read to you by Isla Taring and Jemima Lorimer.
Those were the headlines for today on R1 News at 1. Catch up on previous R1 News wherever you get your podcasts or head to r1.co.nz/news.
That's right, this is the R1 News. Stay tuned because next up we'll have Michael Swanson, a PhD candidate from Otago's politics department, talking on this weekend's hospital protest and National's commitment to Dunedin to deliver the hospital rebuild. But first up, this is Summer Thieves with Saturday Night.
Hi there. Welcome to back. You're listening to R1 News, and today we have Michael Swanson, a PhD candidate on New Zealand politics from the University of Otago. His current thesis is on the opposition in New Zealand's political system. Thank you again, Michael, for coming, and we're very grateful for having you on. Before we start, is there anything you'd like to say, a few words on yourself?
Thanks for having me. My research is, as you said, focused on the opposition in New Zealand's politics, but I'm also really interested, and I do a bit of teaching into public policy and also around elections and political parties and electoral systems. So a lot to do with how our system works and the types of institutions that we have in Wellington and what they do and why they operate in the way that they do. Yeah.
Mm. All of that sounds very interesting. And a little bit about your background is that you're involved with the National Party and have interest in the Dunedin Hospital and its growth. Just last Saturday, there were protests against recently announced budget cuts for the new Dunedin Hospital. I was at the protest myself, and you spoke a bit about how your wife went there as well before the show. And a main concern was that many people were upset over the failure of the current government to uphold promises made in terms of health care. Would you be able to outline the ramifications on the failure to uphold trust and the impact it has on political institutions?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest problems I see is the disconnect between making promises in an election and how you deliver those if you make it into government. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing here is a real problem of big promises being made based on imperfect or incomplete, or at least claimed to be incomplete, information by the National Party. What that says is, why do parties make these kind of promises if they don't know what they're getting themselves into? Why would they go and make such massive promises if they don't have all the information? And that's where we come into that issue of trust in politics. And it's a really big issue right now. People often have politicians at a really low level alongside the likes of used car salesmen in terms of how much they trust these people. And it's only compounded when you have issues like this, where a big promise comes out and then a year in they say, actually, we can't deliver on that because we didn't know things or claim to not know things. So it's a really big thing about trust in our politics and in our political system.
Mm. Building on the protests, would you be able to explore any potential outcomes or institutional responses to the community uproar over the budget cuts or even in response to the protest itself?
I think what you're seeing now is that sort of PR kind of flow on from it. Mm. So what you're seeing at the moment is one of the biggest protests, not only in Dunedin, but actually in the country for a long time. It's right up there with one of the biggest protests in recent memory. And when, a quarter of a city comes out and protests in the street, that's a massive signpost to government that there is something that they've done wrong. And what you're seeing is the Prime Minister now being questioned about it and his perspective on it. And there's some really strange sort of lines that they're using. That the line especially that, well, if we do this, then others lose out, is a really us and them kind of way of approaching it. And it's a really strange sort of approach to take, that kind of divide and conquer kind of way of dealing with things. What I would love to see is that the protest isn't the end of things, because that's the worry here, is that we have a really big protest and then everyone sort of goes to ground and takes their time. What we really need to start doing is lobbying MPs. You need to be writing to your local MPs, writing to government MPs, writing to ministers, so people like Chris Bishop, Shane Retty, and the Prime Minister. We need to be reminding them constantly that this is not going to go away, that this is a mistake that they have made and need to rectify. The other big one is petitions. There needs to be petitions, and it needs to be wider than just Dunedin, because we keep talking about this as the Dunedin Hospital. It's actually a southern regional hospital. It's there to cater for the lower South Island and actually takes a lot of pressure off Christchurch as well. So this is more than just a Dunedin thing, and we need to keep that in the line of sight of politicians.
Mm. And building off of that particular comment, would you be able to elaborate a bit more on like the thus and them?
Yeah, it's a funny sort of tactic that is sometimes used, and we heard it last week with Chris Bishop saying, if we pay $3 billion to build the Dunedin Hospital, then Nelson, Hawke's Bay, Whangarei will miss out on hospital upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't need to be like that. That's a concerted tactic amongst some political elements to create that kind of, well, we don't want them to have that because we want our hospital upgraded and we want things done in our area. It doesn't necessarily need to be that way. And instead of talking about it as, well, you can have a hospital but you can't, we should be actually talking about the health sector as a whole and what needs to be done, because we are decades behind in what needs to be done to upgrade our hospitals across the country.
Building on that, especially on hospital expenditure, a main thing spoken about people in terms of budgeting is we just cannot find the money for the hospital. Broadly speaking, there have also been many concerns over debt in New Zealand as we come out of COVID. However, pointed out during the speeches and during the protests, expenditure is still being made in other places. And as you just touched on, how there needs to be a greater address towards the health sector in general. In terms of debt, how is it that this hospital building is different or equal, or how is debt approached differently in New Zealand to other expenditures?
Yeah, debt's a strange one, yeah. Because actually, comparatively across the world and across the OECD, we actually don't have massive debt-to-GDP problems. We've sat at around that 30-odd percent. Places like the United Kingdom are closer to 100% of GDP in terms of their debt. So there's a really big difference there in what we can afford and what we actually choose to afford. One of the really big comparisons, of course, is the talk about all the different roading projects. So billions of dollars in roads that really, when you talk about the economic gain and the development that comes out of them, is minuscule, really, in terms of what you gain out of them, compared to investment in health, which seems to get a really low threshold for what is allowed and what is acceptable in some elements of government. One really good example is the Prime Minister has shown his support for the big tunnel under Wellington, possibly costing up to $10 billion. Yet a hospital in Dunedin gets questioned when it gets close to $2 billion. You know, that's a really strange kind of logic being applied to debt, where for some reason roads are really good and we should invest billions in them. But hospitals, well, actually, we need to be really careful about how much we invest in them. Actually, it should be the other way around. Really, if you ask any reasonable person on the street, they would say, well, actually, isn't health the number one priority for most people? It should be. So that's where this conversation of debt has got completely, you know, out of whack, really. And we've got a real problem with focus on what we should be spending on and where we are actually spending.
And are there any closing statements you'd like to make? I think that's all that I've prepared for you.
Yeah, I think the biggest one is, and I'll go back to what I said before, is don't stop with a protest. You know, a protest can easily be forgotten to time, so don't stop there. Start writing to MPs, start petitions, start lobbying further. Make sure that this is not something that stops with a single protest at the end of September.
Definitely. And that was Michael Swanson. I really appreciate you coming on again. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Code by Flowers and Keepsakes.
A man must have a code.
Welcome back to the R1 News at 1. You just heard Foley with Tongue, and before that, it was Brian Tamaki and the Cool Aid Kids with Tunnel Vision. Next up for you, we've got Sports Sweep with Sam Somerville.
Sports Sweep with Sam Somerville, your weekly roundup of the biggest sports news on the R1 News at 1.
This is Radio 1 News. I'm Sam Somerville, hosting your Sports Sweep for the 1st of October. In rugby news, the All Blacks had their second win against Australia over the weekend, setting the scoreline at 33-13. This is the All Blacks' first win in Wellington since 2018, some saying the curse has been lifted. The Kiwi side held a 19-13 lead at half-time, managing to deny Australia from scoring in the second half. The match saw Sam Kane receive his 100th cap after taking a short-term contract in Japan last season. This game was potentially Kane and Perenara's last home game.
Really lucky to be able to have this moment at home in New Zealand in front of these incredible fans. I feel like this is the best I've ever seen Wellington, to be honest. The buzz around the stadium has been amazing.
In motorsport news, it's been confirmed that Kiwi Formula One reserve driver Liam Lawson now has a full-time drive in place of Australian Red Bull driver Daniel Ricciardo. Ricciardo clearly being aware of the news during the previous race in Singapore. Lawson will replace Ricciardo from the next round in Texas, set to take place on the 21st of October. It hasn't yet been stated if Lawson will continue driving for the team at the start of next season. Red Bull first team driver Sergio Perez is rumoured to announce his retirement in a month's time at the Mexican Grand Prix. This has led to speculation surrounding the second Red Bull seat and a potential face-off between Liam Lawson and Yuki Tsunoda for promotion. In cricket news, the Black Caps lost their second test match to Sri Lanka, concluding the series getting swept against. The Kiwis were dismissed for 88 after their first innings, while Sri Lanka declared for 602. The Kiwis managed to put up 360 in their second innings, however it wasn't enough to beat the Sri Lankan side, who won by an innings and 154 runs. In football news, Manchester United captain Bruno Fernandes saw a straight red card in the first half of their clash against Tottenham Hotspur. United went on to lose 3-0, putting them at 12th on the table. Chelsea's Cole Palmer scored 4 goals against Brighton, with his hat-trick being completed by the 31st minute of the game. FC Barcelona had a shock loss against 7th place Osasuna, making that their first loss of the season. Manager Hansi Flick has taken the blame for the loss after resting 5 of his key players. Despite the loss, Barcelona remain on the top of the table in the Spanish league, followed by Real Madrid. I'm Sam Somerville, and that was your sports sweep for the 1st of October. Radio 1.
Hey, this is Isla. Welcome back to R1. Next up, before my STEM segment, we have Cootie Cuties with Panic Attack.
STEM News with Isla Taring on the R1 News at 1.
Hey there, you're listening to the R1 News. I'm Isla. And to give a bit of context before the STEM segment starts, I'd like to talk about the SPCA for a bit. When I was first volunteering there, I was looking at like the packaging for the different foods, and when we had like a particular agitated cat, we would give them a specific type of kibble which had tryptophan as the main ingredient. Now, tryptophan is an amino acid, an essential amino acid that creates niacin, which is key in creating a neurotransmitter known as serotonin. Serotonin in the body and in the body of cats and humans is a neuromodulator for the nervous system. Recently at the Ruhr Universität Bochum, it was found that 5-HT2A, a receptor, was discovered. The receptor is associated with the serotonin receptor family and is capable of allowing the dampening of visual information, which allows the brain to have more space for internal processing and interpretations. Unique to this receptor is its ability to suppress data without the inhibition of other processes. Scientists were able to find this out through making computer models to simplify neural connections and circuits. The article proposed that the discovery could help with the effects of LSD or other types of psychedelic drugs and disease through the development of therapies that could act as an analog to serotonin to regulate the chemical imbalance of the brain, essentially where serotonin would attach to and where the receptor will undergo a series of other chain reactions to then cause the brain to process and intake less light. The drug would be in the place of serotonin and cause the dimming of other signals and senses. And it is in this case that tryptophan, and then being a precursor to serotonin, can act in a similar way as a drug to other serotonin receptors. And that's how it all relates back to cats and the SPCA in a very roundabout way. But yeah, that's all for this STEM segment.
Thank you for that STEM news today. That's super interesting. Next up for you, we've got R1 News weather forecast.
The R1 News at 1 weather forecast.
It is currently 17.2 degrees in Dunedin. It is so warm and so nice, but it is cloudy. Northerlies will be developing this afternoon. The low today will be 10.
You've been listening to R1 News at 1, here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. The R1 News is uploaded daily wherever you get your podcasts. Or head to r1.co.nz/news to get yourself all caught up. Additionally, you can follow R1 News NZ to keep up to date with all our newsworthy happenings.